Welcome to Metacast. This is Josh Anderson.
And this is Bob Galen.
And we today are going to talk about self-directed teams. And I hope to get one or two words in, because I know Bob's fired up about this topic. This was his idea when we spoke.
Probably, I don't know if it's my idea, but it's something that I'm passionate about.
I'm not saying self-directed teams are your idea. It was your idea that we talk about self-directed teams.
Well, I think it's an important topic, don't you?
In general.
I mean, it's sort of what makes Agile go round. It's the team. We talk a lot about, you know, deciding the team, or it's the team has to make a decision, or the team has a responsibility to do something. So all of that's around self-direction. So I think we forgot the intro, though. This is the Metacast.
I said Metacast.
Did you say Metacast?
I did.
All right. I don't mean to blow. I mean, we're coming from beautiful
downtown. Well, it's not really downtown, but it is Fuquay Marina.
It is. I'm considered downtown. Beautiful downtown Burbank. If you remember Laugh-In, this is dating myself. Laugh-In is an old show, and it came from beautiful downtown Burbank, and I think that was tongue-in-cheek. So this is beautiful downtown Fuquay Marina, equally tongue-in-cheek. So self-directed agile teams. Why don't we start with, you know, when I teach project management, agile project management and stuff, I always try to talk to the audience or the students, and I talk about self-direction, and what do they think that is? So Josh, why don't you take a stab at a deeper definition of what is self-direction?
Am I defining it as me, or am I defining it as one of your students?
You're defining it. What does it mean to you? What does self-direction mean to you?
I think there's going to be for those that listen, there's going to be the question of self-directed versus self-organized. And there's a little bit of people will try and find out a bit of a difference, but I think of them as one and the same. The self-directedness, meaning that they work with each other to identify highest priority and what they should be working on, Susie needs help with something, so Jimmy's going to drop what he has because he knows it's most important to meet the team's goals, and in order to do that, he might have to become a tester for a day and help Susie out or something like that. So that's a very loose definition.
So I think work selection, right, what you were just talking about was sort of the work selection part. I think it's like tasking. Project management, prioritization, like what is the team going to work on? So you sort of didn't directly say it, but the team figures out what they're going to work on themselves.
Right.
Right, or who's going to specifically work on what aspects of it. So that's one part. Any other parts? Are they self-policing?
Yeah,
meaning
but
if Susie, like, you know, puts a firecracker in Tommy's cereal in the morning or something like that, and it blows his finger off or something. I know that's a pretty lame example.
I know.
No, but, you know, does the team police itself for as far as behaviors go?
Yeah, but I don't know that I would say that's part of self-directedness. I mean, maybe it is, but that's just like good teamsmanship.
I think it's a part of it. It's holding each other accountable.
Yeah, okay. That's fine.
It's like norms, right? There's norms of Like working 2-hour days.
Right.
Right. That's, to me, that would be unacceptable in a team. Or, you know, if you're on a football team, you have a football background. Someone who doesn't like, you know, someone's in the line, but they don't block, right?
Right, yeah.
They fake it, and last minute they sort of pull away, and they, I don't want to get dirty, right?
Yeah.
That would be sort of.
That would end badly.
Yeah, for them.
Yeah.
As far as the rest of the team goes, right? If they're clean at the end of the game and every other lineman is dirty.
Yeah.
So I think behaviors like that, norms, holding each other accountable for norms, the work, even one of the questions sometimes is, can a self-directed team kick someone off the island, is one question I ask people to sort of make the, it's an extreme case.
Right.
Right. But let's say someone really isn't cutting it and they're really not pulling their weight. I would hope it wouldn't get to this, but I'd expect a self-directed team to maybe kick someone, you know, to either try to eject them themselves or escalate it to a manager or to a scrum master and say, hey, you know, this person isn't pulling their weight.
Have you ever seen that?
I've actually, not the island, we've gotten there before they were physically jettisoned from teams.
Right.
But I actually have seen teams that cannot, they eject team members because they're not cutting it. Actually, one of the interesting things, if they're a good agile team, I've seen them try So you'll take a, let's use a developer as an example. They'll actually try to find places where that person can actually make a, an impact.
Right.
So if it's a, you know, a front end developer, then they'll try them on maintenance. They'll try them on bug fixing. The team will try their best to find a place where that person, even testing, where can they make a difference? So they're pretty, they're pretty patient. But then if a push comes to shove, if it's not working out, then usually they're not mean about it, but they'll escalate to me as a manager and they'll say Harry isn't doing very well or Sally's not doing very well. Do something about that.
Right.
And I'll listen to the team. I don't know if you have a choice actually at that point.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Cause if you don't, you're really, you know, ruining things, you know, the, addition through subtraction. I've certainly seen that on teams I've been through where, we eventually remove somebody from the team and or the company, and even though we were a person down, we actually accelerated, which was refreshing to see.
Well, the team, I think sometimes you're telling the team as a leader. So there's this, we just talked about sort of the balancing act or the relationship between leadership and the self-directed team. And maybe that kind of segues into it. I don't know if a self-directed team, part of the definition is, are they an island unto themselves? So are they totally, are the inmates running the asylum is maybe one way to say it. And I don't think a self-directed team says, here's the keys to the car, go drive wherever you want.
Right.
Right. I think there's constraints around the team, like business constraints, behavior constraints, goal constraints. But within those constraints, then the team is responsible for driving in that direction.
So what things aren't self-directed? So HR type stuff, like we talked about.
That's an easy example, right? HR stuff. You're not, you know, even the Scrum Master, I try to keep Scrum Masters away from personnel issues. Even if they're a very strong Scrum Master, I try to keep them away. I talk about Scrum Masters and product owners being leaders, but at the same time, I don't want them to be doing hiring and firing and things like that. And really handling like hard coaching issues. So HR would be excluded. I would agree with that. What else?
I don't know. I should say jinx and then punch you.
You could do that. Well, I think salaries, it's HRs, it's salaries, it's rewards, so to some degree.
Yeah, they kind of view that.
I mean, the small rewards, yes. The larger rewards, like can we all have a Ferrari because we just hit a sprint goal? I think maybe large rewards not.
You get Ferraris out for sprint goals?
We do, actually.
Man.
I it's a hidden perk where I work. Right? We try to keep it under the covers. You can imagine why.
Yeah. Do you have any? I mean, have you given any out?
I have three in my garage at home. Nice. I believe that, and they're very small. They're Matchbox Ferraris. So I think that's outside the team scope. I think business setting, and you know this, the product owner. So we talk about the alignment of agile teams, like the business drives. So I don't think a self-directed team can say, "Heck, I don't want to do that feature because I think you're full of crap,"
right.
And I'm going to do. We think this is the most compelling business feature. The team can challenge the business. It can challenge the product owner. But I think at the end of the day, at least in my coaching, I try to say, team, listen to your business. So,
well, yeah, they still have to follow the basic rules where the product owner sets the priorities and
right.
stuff like that.
And they do that. I think that, you know, from a behavior perspective, they can't ignore, like, the basic agile rules. That we, you know, we've talked lately about that in previous metacasts. We've talked about guardrails. I think the notion of guardrails. And we've talked about, you know, that the team actually has to listen to the guardrails. So, for example, sprint length. We're all going to plan in points. We're going to use planning poker quality, right? So the team isn't, you know, they don't have carte blanche when it comes to deciding what quality means within the team, right?
Right.
They have to hit high quality targets. They can't skip unit testing, for example. So I think things like that are outside the team, but within the work, within the who does the work, is everyone contributing fairly? Are we covering for one another? Are we helping one another? So if someone is behind, do you help? If someone is ahead, are they offering to help? And are we always working on the, you know, highest priority as a team? Are we picking the priority right? Keeping ourselves challenged on point. I think those are the things that are, you know, sort of within the realm of the self-directed team.
So I know something you and I have talked about. Regarding teams and view of a healthy team is, I forget the term you use, but I think it was just healthy debate that you expect a certain amount of debate amongst your team, and sometimes heated. And I think the more heated, the better, I've heard you say.
Well, it's not the more. I mean, again, you don't want.
Well, I know they're not going to like come to fists.
You don't want to kill each other, but it's like the
professional heated debate.
Well, it's a tension. I think there's a natural tension in healthy teams. I mean, one of the references I may have used. I like this book a lot. It's The Five Dysfunctions of a Team by Patrick Lencioni, and he talks about a triangle and the basic, you know, the lowest rung on the triangle is trust. And then the second, so once you have trust as a team, once you trust each other, and again, I try to draw a correlation to sports, to your sports background, and I'm sure there's trust. You don't walk in, I bet you don't walk in, into a locker room when you first went to, you went to what, Cincinnati?
The University of Cincinnati.
The Fighting
Bearcats.
Bearcats.
Two-time back-to-back Big East champs.
Exactly.
Yes.
Boorah for the Bearcats. So I think I just made some bonus points there,
yeah.
Listeners. But the first time you go into the locker, you don't know everyone. So there's probably a lack of, there's basic trust, but there's a lack of what, knowing each other and true trust.
Right.
If you were on the line, then you learn, you know, what are some folks' tendencies and things like that. And then his second row, once you get basic trust, he talks about passionate debate about the things that matter. And that's this tense discussion. And I think in a healthy team, so he's talking about dysfunctional teams. So there's a lack of trust. So dysfunctional or heavy trust. And in teams that are very quiet, he's like, they don't trust each other. And oh, by the way, they really don't debate things.
Right.
They really don't have those tense discussions, that passionate debate about. And I think for us, for software engineers, the emphasis is on what the things. So a lot of engineers like to debate, you know, everything.
Right.
Like the things that don't matter.
Yeah, you just want to argue.
Don't they? Yeah. It's true.
I have folks on my team that I'm like, you just want to argue, right?
It's one of the most argumentative disciplines, I think. I'm serious, on the planet.
And us are lawyers.
That's probably true. Or plumbers, too, maybe, right? Or something where they're worth fighting with you over bills or something. But no, up there, I think engineers and about the nuance of small, minuscule things. So I think the key distinction here is really arguing on things like getting a UI right. What does the customer really want? What's the simplest possible way to implement an interface from a workflow point of view?
Right. We are debating a technology shift in my current company. And watch out. It is, you know, everybody has an opinion and they're all different. You know, they're like buttholes. You ever hear that?
I have heard that.
Yeah. Everyone has one. Everyone, they all stink.
Everyone has one. Exactly.
Yeah. So it's just like, come on.
But as a coach, I mean, that's not our topic tonight, but I mean, as a coach, you sort of have to tolerate. I've when I was younger and a little bit more volatile, I used to, I had a very...
You were younger?
Yes. At one point, I had a very strong opinion. I wouldn't listen very effectively to others. And I wouldn't foster the debate quite the way I would like, but I've gotten better at sort of nudging folks to, you know, is this really important? So getting away from the unimportant stuff. And I would argue like 80%. I'm good. You know, you've heard me use that Pareto rule a lot, right?
Right.
That 80-20 rule, but I think it holds. It's like 80% of the stuff is fluff and 20% of the stuff really matters. And let's focus there. So yes, I think a self-directed team has self-induced trust, so they get trust, and then they hold themselves accountable by having that passionate debate.
Right, and I think that debate is almost imperative of teams that really care. You know, I think that's certainly a symptom of a non-self-directed team is it doesn't really matter. You know, so we'll just go along with it. That's what I've seen a lot where people are just like, well, we'll get there, we'll get it done, as opposed to teams like, we got a goal. We're going to get there. Come hell or high water. We're going to figure out how that's going to happen. And that gets people going. It gets people debating on how we're going to get there and the ways we're going to get there and how we're not going to get there.
Well, it's passion, right?
Yeah.
It's sort of that passionate debate. It's the passion part of that. I've seen teams. It's really weird. I talked about the book, but it's not just triangles or pyramids and it's not just layers, but I think it takes time from teams. I think we've beaten down teams. So I think our traditional way of managing and leading software teams is sort of this command. We use the term, you know, this in Agile. The converse of Agile leadership is command and control. And I think we've been so command and control oriented in waterfall environments and in other environments, and we beat people up. So if they gave us an estimate and we didn't like it, we just cut it in half and say, well, suck it up. You know, so we just beat them into submission. So then all of a sudden, you have these folks that are just like, they've given in to the man, right?
Right.
They've given in to command and control. And it's not just young ones. It's media. I mean, it's all levels of experience and sort of leadership. We've done it to them. And then then all of a sudden we have this revelation, right? And we say, oh, self-direction, Agile is the answer, Agile is the silver bullet. And we throw these beaten husks of people into a team, and we're like, you know, woo-ha, yourself, be self-directed. And have you ever seen the teams? Have you?
So yes.
Do they instantly become self-directed?
No, it is painful.
Right.
And as people wander around trying to figure out what self-directed means. You know, I've had people come up and ask, so what do we do now? You know, how do you help us figure out where to go and why isn't this working? And just that to me is one of the more difficult things of kind of waking the team up. And but once it does happen, it's like you light that fire and off they go. But trying to find that spark that gets them to see that they do have a sense of control and that they aren't dependent upon others to task them with everything that they're going to do. And then some of the things that I've seen is they end up trying to command and control themselves, right? So they revert back to how they were managed. They say, hey, we're managing ourselves, but they're doing it the wrong way.
Well, there's a manager who's telling other people what to do.
Right.
Right? And really, so then they're just like taking that dysfunctional hierarchy that they hated, and they're introducing it on top of themselves.
Yeah. So
that's an anti-pattern, right? I've seen that. I've actually seen teams, I don't know if you've seen it, that they actually freeze. It's not that they don't ever get to self-direction, but it's like, you know, you got to almost like, it's like the jaws of life. You have to like shock them. They don't move. Yeah. I've seen teams frozen.
Yeah, we've seen that. And really what it's gotten down to is just having a team shake up. And that's usually one of the last things you want to do is shake up teams, because you have some others that have started to gel, and now you're going to break up a good team to fix a bad team. And is that really the right thing to do? But you have to look at the overall program or product or whatever your teams are a part of. And it was one point where, like, we have to do this because the team just couldn't get it figured out.
Does leadership play a part? So a team near and dear to your hearts. So you and I work together, so I'm using your current context.
Yeah.
But I remember we were rolling Agile out at a team together at another location. And I remember what happened. So here's a funny It's a self-direct. This is a true story. The names will be changed to protect the innocent, but and the
company. Except for us.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But I remember I did a training session, and then I came back home. So I, you know, flew up and did Agile training, and we kicked off some sprints, and we broke into sub teams, and everyone was really excited about Agile, and I sort of came back, and I talked to leadership there, and I'm like, oh, you have to be careful about your self-directed leadership. You have to be careful about how you lead self-directed teams. Well, this leadership team sort of took that. They almost took my advice, and they took it so strongly to heart that they actually stopped talking to their team members.
Right.
So they totally shut down any leadership advice, and the teams were so they were trying to become self-directed, but they needed almost, remember last week we were talking about Shu, Ha, and Ri?
Right.
They were Shu teams, so Shu teams actually need some guidance. There's nothing wrong. It doesn't mean you're not self-directed. And they weren't getting it. And I remember the anecdote up there was one young little tester in a daily stand-up, you know, boldly, she was very quiet all the time, and then she suddenly said, you know, you will talk in this stand-up. She was talking to one of the chickens, one of the leaders who hadn't been talking. And it's like, we need your help, we need your advice, and we need it now.
Right.
Right. And I think that's it. Now that's a bold example of what? I think that is self-direction, starting that passion coming up. And then the leader started talking. And they were cautious. I mean, their hearts were in the right place because they were really trying to honor agility,
right?
But they took it to extremes. So I'm talking too much, but it's that leadership dynamic. I imagine that. But what do you think about that? Leadership balance as far as self-direction.
And that's really the hardest. And there's a lot of people that struggle with that. And that's, I'm giving a talk on that with you on April 8th, I believe, about how to be an effective Agile leader, Agile manager. I've got the same thing submitted to Agile 2010. We'll see if I get
it's an amusing,
accepted.
You have an amusing title for that. I forget
Chicken Training.
Chicken Training. Chicken That's training. What it is. Yeah, yeah, I like that idea. So,
and to me, it's really because you go to the website, you read the books, it talks about the three roles in Scrum, right? So it talks about the product owner, the team, and the Scrum Master. So that leaves a lot of people in your organization out of that picture. What does everybody else do? And that's where teams struggle, because those other roles struggle and they try and force themselves into it, or as you just talked about, take themselves completely out of it, and that doesn't work. So really trying to find that balance is difficult, and to be the guide, to be the redirecting force, as opposed to being the driver. So coming from a project manager role and then stepping in and being a manager, being a manager or a product owner, and just the whole shift of the controlling where I'm telling you what to do, is a bit of a shift. And then I don't know, I'm really starting to wonder, and probably shooting ourselves in the foot by saying this, can you train somebody to be a good Agile leader? Or is it one of those things where you're a leader or you're not? Where people say people are born a leader, you can't, you know, teach a leader or something like that. So take it out of the other context where people say you can't teach somebody certain things. Do you think you can really take a, like say a classical project manager, that's what they've done for 15, 20 years, and then try and get them to lead and manage an Agile team? Anything's possible, I understand that.
I think anything's possible. I mean, a lot of the Agile coaches, if you look at the Agile conference, for example, if you look at who's teaching, a lot of the people who are the pundits right now, came from what, traditional project management, traditional management. So they came up through the ranks. Joanna Rothman is one of those folks. She has these war stories of being a traditional manager. Now, to hear her tell it, she was always an exceptional manager, meaning she always had what, non-command and control attributes. She was always a congruent leader.
Well, and that's kind of the argument that I'm making.
Right, I think they morph. I think I've seen so many people that can morph. I think it's a choice you can make. I think you can, you know, I think people are more malleable if they're, you know, if they're younger and they're just, it's their first leadership stint. So can they be formed into Agile leaders? Is that an easier training? Yeah, I'm not the leaders are born.
Right.
I'm not a proponent of that. I think my lineage is more towards leaders can be made.
Right.
Well, now, can everyone be a leader? No, you can fail. I mean, you can, it will not be your strength, but I don't think you have I don't think it's in your DNA. I don't think there's a particular predilection. I think it's just you have to work hard. You have to be... So what are some of the aspects of that? I think you have to be self-aware.
I think really having the trust and the ability to let go and know that it's going to be okay, to be comfortable with not delegation, but that same kind of theory of, you know, I can trust my team to get it done, and I know it's going to happen. And it might be a little bit uncomfortable for me for a little while, but I'll get there. And it's an extreme argument for argument's sake. But with the leaders are born, I'm just struggling to see people lately make that transition, and I'm not sure what it is.
But maybe they're not leaders. I mean, again, right.
You just argued my point then. Right?
I don't. So what I'm saying is, can you take people with, you know, a certain caliber of person? So you started with project managers, traditional project managers. Can they move from command and control to Agile? I think if they have the heart for it and the intent, right, I think they can. Now, if we take the case where there's young folks, they're non-leaders, they're programmers. Is every programmer have leadership potential? Not at all. And then, so either command and control or not, or Agile leadership. So I think you have to cherry pick those. I think, you know, if you look at the profile of the, what's the Myers-Briggs, like I'm an INTJ or something like that.
Oh, gosh.
Right. So there's these, you know, the preferences for most engineers is not leadership oriented. I think right. I'm an exception that way. Right. And that's why I don't think many, I think you and I were exchanging email around this of, you know, can everyone be a leader? Can, does every solid architect, can every really strong programmer then become what, a manager, or right. should they?
Right.
I think the answer is no.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, I think we've all seen points where the, where the team's best developer becomes the manager, and then it's just a total mess.
I, in my experience, and I like to use numbers sometimes just as communication points, I think 90% of the times those things fail.
Right.
Right. It's a minute, so one out of, you have a 1 out of 10 shot of picking the right. It's almost like, you know, a crapshoot of picking someone who does have leadership potential. I remember when my first, I was declared a leader by someone throwing. The year was like 1983. I came in one morning.
Sure, wasn't 73?
No, it was. I'm not quite. It was not, sir. But I came in the morning, and there was a project plan on my chair with people's names on it. And I'm like, well, what the hell is this? Right? Yesterday I was a software engineer. Today I find a project plan. I went into my boss, and he's like, oh, Bob, I've just promoted you to leader. You know, and there was nothing. I had shown no ability to do anything. No project planning or anything. All I did was code well.
Right.
Right. All I did was work well with software engineers very quietly because I'm a flaming introvert, right? So in an introverted fashion. But to me, I was lucky. I think I'm a reasonable leader or manager. And I was just, I was lucky that I was selected, I guess. And then I kind of passed muster over time.
Right.
But getting back to self-directed teams, I think we're hitting around it. That I think the leadership dynamic is a really important part. I think it's even very subtle. Like, you can have a manager who's not even your words. I've actually seen teams that pay attention to the body language of folks around them, and they'll almost forget that they're self-directed, and they'll try to please. So, you know, you raise your eyebrow. Someone says, oh, that task will take me 5 days. And you actually raise your eyebrow. And they're like, no, I made a mistake. It's 2 days. And they'll start cutting their estimates just to sort of please the leadership.
Right.
And that's not self-direction at all. I mean, they're fooling themselves in that case, right? So I think leadership has to, I mean, to your point, you almost have to shut up, I think. When you get a very young self-directed team, when they're first forming, leadership plays sort of an incubation role in that if you want them to grow, I think you almost have to exaggerate your disconnect. Not be perfectly quiet,
right?
But you almost have to just almost every day say, I trust you guys, I trust you guys, I trust you guys. Just go do what you need to do.
Well, and I think making that statement of I trust you guys to do the right thing is a very powerful thing that teams will latch on to. They'll kind of say, whoa, okay guys, it's on us. How are we going to make this happen? I've seen teams really latch onto that. That's how we had real success with the team at my current job, where we just said, guys, I think you can do it, and just walk away, or asking a question in a stand-up and say, I am concerned about this, but I know you guys are going to figure it out, so I'll check back tomorrow. And they, right then, they started talking about it, and they came up with a plan and said, here, this is what we're going to do. I said, looks great. I trust you guys to get it done. You know, so that trust factor, like we talked about in the first cast, is really huge. And being able to trust yourself to not jump in. And I even had to hide behind a cue ball as a part of a stand-up because people were looking at me. So I'll just go, I'll sit in the cue next to it just to hear, so people aren't talking towards me, because people then start talking to managers, start talking to whoever. And that really breaks down the team of, hey, what are we doing?
I think you hit a key, Josh. I mean, and I think this is a general key that good leaders with these, you know, these shoe teams who are just learning self-direction, you have to be very forceful in your trust and your support, almost to the point of exaggerating it, so that they know that it's like, oh, he or she means it, right? And then do it day after, you know, you can't just do it for a day. You do it for several days. You do it for a week. You do it for a sprint. And it's like, crap, Josh, you know, on Monday he said it, on Tuesday he said it.
Right.
By the end of the week, they're like, he's not here. Crap, we're on our own. By the end of the second week, it's like, we're on our own,
right?
And then you start engaging them. You start, you know, providing guidance. And it's not, I don't think you totally walk away. You haven't done that. But you really, your body language and your actions really have to align very well with your words, like, I trust you.
Right.
And be very consistent, just to get them going. And then I think you get more and more ability to come in every once in a while and have more rapport, where you could maybe be more overbearing occasionally, right? You know, you could be more forceful, and it's not going to destroy the self-directedness of the team.
Right, and really what happens is once a team becomes self-directed, they're more responsive to a challenge. Yep. So I would come in mid-sprint and say, guys, we're not going to make it. There's no way you guys are going to do it. And I would draw something on the burn down and say, this is where we are. This is where we need to be. That's not going to happen.
Right.
And they would just say, okay, just watch and see what happens. And that's a very powerful thing, of just throwing a challenge on a truly self-directed team that's very confident in themselves and what they can do, because they've proven it over time and seeing what happens.
Right. Well, and it's multidimensional. So, and that's on the other thing that I think, you know, it's so easy to blame the man for stuff like, they're making me do stuff. So part of self-direction is looking at software engineering work isn't just about the software. It's about what? It's about a balancing act. I'm trying to think of maybe the, what's the triangle in project management? You balance time against scope, against quality, against cost. And so sometimes we think, well, you know, the teams want the managers to do
triangle.
That. Right, so it's a triangle with quality. The way they draw it is a triangle with quality in the middle.
Okay.
So quality is a variable across those other three things. But the point. Thank you for interrupting me.
I'm the comic relief here.
Yeah.
In Bob's soapbox. That's what I do.
No, you're not. You have some value that you
not put, much,
but quite a bit. But the point is, self-directed teams, they can't just look at it parochially and say, all we care about is lines of code. Don't they have to, so the teams have to care about quality versus lines of code, design versus cost, how versus time versus scope. They have to take that business. It's not just the managers that worry about that.
Right.
And I'm not saying they're doing business cases or anything like that. They're in the team. But they can't just jump up on a one vertical soapbox and say, you know, it's going to take us 8 years to do this, so shut up and give us 8 years. That's unacceptable, right? They have to vary that. So they have to vary the time. If they vary the time, then they vary the scope. They can't vary quality.
Right.
So self-directed teams, they have to own their own quality.
Right.
That's a broader view. That's a more nuanced view. And I think they got off easier. It's the wrong way to say it, but I think teams got off, or it was a simpler model years ago.
It was less transparent.
The man owned all of the stuff, tells us what to do, and all we do is deliver the code.
Right.
The self-directed team owns a lot of that variation.
Right.
And there's responsibility to that, right? So if they take longer, we may lose money as a company from a business perspective.
Right.
They're part of that moving that lever around, and they have to be cognizant of it.
Well, I'm hitting on the responsibility thing. I was at a great talk at Agilepalooza, which you like to mock the name of, but
no.
Lee, you did mock the name.
I did a little bit, but
it was
more the boondoggle. It was more the boondoggle that you were going on than it was the name of Agilepalooza.
Oh, sure. Play it off now.
But if you can sell a boondoggle, hey, you know, more power to you.
So Lee Henson gave a great talk about enabling agile teams, or enabling effective agile teams. I forget what the terminology, but he used a classic Spider-Man quote of "With great power comes great responsibility," and really drove home about, he had quite a story where he had been a part of where the project failed, and he started talking about whose fault is it, and he drilled down from the top and got all the way down and said it's really the team's fault. So with all that extra power definitely comes a little bit of a burden for the team to really make it happen, because it is on them. So there's a shift where people are uncomfortable with that transparency. They're uncomfortable with that responsibility. So you do end up having to find the right people. You can't just plug the same people that have been controlled and commanded their entire career and say, okay, now it's all on you, and walk away and good luck.
I mean, you more eloquently stated that and using Lee, but that's sort of where I was going with it, is it's sort of scary to be in self-direction, because you're sort of making these broad decisions as a team, albeit as a team.
Right.
But you're making these decisions that affect things that you didn't used to affect. Right. And you can either...
It's like going to college. You got all this freedom all of a sudden.
And good news is you got all the freedom. Bad news is now you have this responsibility.
Right.
What am I going to do? It is that same... I think it is that same adjustment. I think the answer is trust. Again, it's almost the same answer for the team. As the leader, trust the team. I remind myself, the best projects I've ever been a part of, teams have delivered, not individuals.
Right. Right.
So there is power in teaming. There's tremendous power in teaming. But you right. sort of have to get the fear out of the way. You have to get the history of command and control out of the way. Not everyone, to your point, is going to be able to do that.
Right.
So I don't think you throw people in a self-directed team. I was coaching several teams from a company not that long ago, and they were trying to do a top-down adoption of Scrum. They did Scrum Master training, and they started off like N number of pilots, probably, you know, 5, 6, 7 pilots. Some of those teams, I remember the Scrum Masters, after a few sprints, they were ringing me up or emailing me, and they're like, you know, the teams are not, they're not self-directed.
Right. Right?
At all. And we're not breaking through at all. So they're just behaving the way they used to behave.
Right, yeah.
And it's like, what do we do in this Scrum thing? And I'm like, you have to trust the teams. And we were talking about maybe ways to energize the teams. But at the end of the day, they were looking for a silver bullet. It's like, can we shoot the self-direction missile into the team and please? And it's, you can't.
Right.
And some of the answer was, I think this was a staid, very large-scale enterprise. Maybe those teams weren't well selected from a pilot point of view. Maybe they would have never been agile.
Right.
I actually was leaning, after over time, we were sort of leaning in that direction that we did a poor choice, or someone did a poor job of what staffing those teams.
Right.
Because they were too entrenched, and it wasn't sort of their fault at all. They just couldn't get out of their own way.
I agree. I've seen that.
Pregnant pause. So what else? Anything else about self-directed teams? We talked about leadership. Talked about definitions. We've talked about some of the freezing aspects of it. I'm trying to think. Technology, retrospectives. So how do they improve?
One of my favorite parts, retrospectives. I really challenge teams to not get comfortable with themselves and always try and find ways to get better. And I've had teams say, well, that just means you're never happy. I'm like, well, I could be happy, but I can always be happier. You know, so that's really, I've yet to see a team that really embraces the continuous self-improvement. Teams get kind of complacent. You know, they kind of hit a plateau of, yeah, we're good, and they feel good about themselves. You have to shake them and wake them up a little bit. So I've yet to see a team that consistently gets better with every retrospective that they have. So maybe it's an unrealistic expectation or something. But
I think it comes back. I mean, one of the things is it comes back to that trust/passion. And so it's passion debate about the things that matter. It isn't just designs. I think it's improvement. So there's another level of trust of, so do we trust each other to work together to produce great software? That's one aspect. But when we get into a retrospective room, do we trust each other enough to say, you know, Josh Anderson, you stink.
Right.
I'm pairing with you and you need to shower more often. Do I have enough courage in that venue to actually confront you on it? And, you know, to be frank, I would never confront you on it, right? I wouldn't. Or it would take me, you know, it's a silly example, but it's true. It's getting the comfort to...
Wait, are you trying to tell me something without telling me?
Well, I am. All right, let me just have the courage. Josh, you stink.
I'll be back.
But you know what? It's that giving each other feedback. That's another hurdle.
That's certainly a higher level of trust that people aren't always going to get comfortable with, especially in a workplace or having to sit next to. And that's true in a marriage, in a family, and anything. You know, it's not just a team level.
It takes a long time. It's another level, and it also, I think, it's one of those, I guess, avenues to get to high performance, because now I'm not joking. It's talking about, you know, how do you write your code? If someone isn't, everyone's producing 50 lines of, you know, some artificial example of everyone on the team is producing 50 lines of really high quality code per day, that's just absolutely done are 100 lines and someone's producing 20 lines. But they're nice, they're friendly, they bring in bagels every day, everyone loves them, they have amusing anecdotes. They're a little bit mediocre.
Right.
What do you do about that? That's a really hard, but you want to get better, you want to create a high performance team. So now the monkey is on the back of the team. I mean, that person is dragging, I'm not trying to fire him.
Right.
But in that silly example, that person is dragging the performance of the team.
Right.
And it's really on them to figure out, hey, how are we going to approach that? And it may be something they defer. I actually trust the team. You know, in those cases, it's like trust the I want them to be facing their demons in the retrospective, but not all at once.
Right.
And some things, you know, maybe you never, you know, you don't get to very quickly. Like, I think I painted a hard one. It's like one of the hardest things to do, I think, in a team is give constructive criticism to someone you really, you know, who's trying hard and you right. really like and is a great team member, but they're really not cutting it.
Right. Yeah, that's tough as a manager, but it's something that you have to know is the right thing to do. And usually the right thing to do is a little bit painful, but in the end, you feel good doing it. You feel better after it's done. So you're going to have to kind of muscle through that and make it happen. So it's painful, but if you want to go from good to great, you know, it's not easy to stretch like that. So that's, it's a painful thing sometimes.
So Jeff Sutherland talks about hyper-productive teams, and he sort of characterizes a hyper-productive scrum team as being one that's getting 300% more done than they normally would have done before they were agilified. And he actually talks in terms of, well, how long does it take to get to go from the beginning, the shoe state, to high, I'm using just shoe state as an example.
Right.
So from the beginning, you're a beginning agilist. How many sprints does it take you to get to hyper productivity? And he talks in terms of, now I'm embellishing a little bit, I think, 3 to 4 to 5. So 3 to 4 to 5 sprints to get to a state where you're 300% more productive. So you're producing 3 times what you could have done in waterfall. Have you seen many self-teams get to that?
No, sir.
Neither have I. I wonder sometimes if he's full of crap or what.
Maybe he's trying to sell himself some consulting time.
And I'm not calling him directly a liar, but I don't think there's other stuff underneath that.
Right.
Like, I bet I know there's one thing underneath that says, I bet that team has, like, automation. So I bet that team under the covers has continuous integration working flawlessly.
So he's throwing that under the veil of Agile and Scrum.
Right. But I bet he's not talking about it, but I bet that team has, like, flawless CI. I bet that team has 100% automation. You know what I mean?
Right.
They don't. Another way of saying it is, I bet that team has very little to no technical debt.
Right. And high code coverage.
And high code coverage, yeah. Stuff. You know, it can't be an average. I've rarely seen that.
I could see that if it was a team that was, you know, pretty new, hadn't figured any of that stuff out on their own. Because that stuff, people say, is a prereq for Agile. But to me, there's lots of people that do it just because it's the right thing to do.
Yep.
So maybe if you don't have any of that.
So maybe Greenfield team, yep. Greenfield project, Greenfield team. I don't know if he cherry picks him. I wonder if they're like the best of the best. I don't know. I kind of doubt whether it's the best of the best. But it's probably a team that's open-minded. You're not going to get a lot of pushback.
Right.
Right? So they can't... It's probably not... Not probably. It can't be an entrenched team with a lot of tools and stuff around it. I mean, so speaking for me, it's... Let's say 2, 3, 4 sprints. And again, I've seen quicker acceleration, but... You know, probably twice that much time to get a team that I feel like comfortable that they're beginners, but they're making progress. 300%. If I can get 150%,
yeah,
right, I feel really good as a coach.
Yeah, definitely.
So in 5 or 6 or 7 sprints, in 150% productivity, I feel great actually as a coach. And if the quality is holding,
and then it's sustainable.
Exactly.
That's a huge part.
Exactly. It can't be this burst. I mean, sustainable pace. So it's consistent, sustainable pace. Have we beat it to death?
I believe we have. We're coming up on the magic time where we kind of
close things down.
Yeah.
Okay.
So let's see what we have on the horizon. The weekend of March 20th, you and I will both be at the Agile Coach Camp 2010.
I'm looking forward to that. It's a couple days. I think it's a Friday night, Saturday, Sunday, where it's here in Raleigh.
Yep.
In the Raleigh area. That's a first for us. I think the last time it was in Detroit or in Michigan or something. I think 65 people were signed up.
Quite a lot.
So it's open space. So it's an open space event.
Which I've never done.
I have. I like rigor. You know, I like written, you know.
Right.
Give me an agenda and write things down. So I still struggle with open space, but I'm hopeful we're going to figure it out. So there's an open space event. Where else are we? We're also speaking at like a night.
Yes.
IT? There's an IT
group. Yeah, the ITP, Association of Internet Information Internet Technology Professionals. Yeah, RTP.
We're giving a talk there. Did you know that there was a CITCON, a Continuous Integration and Testing conference going on here locally in Raleigh?
I did not.
I will have to share that with you.
This is like the epicenter of the
just
Agile
this,
world.
Just this year. Just yeah. this year, we're really lucky to have a couple key conferences here. CITCON is for testers and automation folks. If anyone's listening to this and interested, I think it's in April. It's in a couple weeks at iContact, my current company. I think we're sending five people, some testers.
Nice.
Automation folks and CI folks.
Cool.
I think some of the leading experts in in the cruise control area. And okay. What's another one? Maven.
Right.
There's some really cool people coming. And gathering, the thing I still struggle with is get, 100 people together who don't have an agenda. And, I just have to get over the open space chaos, perception that I have, but I'm looking forward to it.
It'll be a self-directed team.
But that's what they're setting it up.
Right.
It is what it is. You self-select what sessions are you going to go to. The price of admission and those things is bring something to talk about.
Right.
So not only are you a listener, but you're a sharer. I love all of that stuff, but then I struggle with it. I only talk a good game when it comes to self-directed.
Apparently so.
When I have to behave that way, I'll
you can lead a team that's self-directed, but you can't be self-directed.
I can be, but it's painful. It's like I get sort of pains.
I can't wait for this now. I can't wait to watch and see you squirm.
I won't squirm, and then I'll be comfortable then. I'll be fine.
We'll see. I will give everybody a full report on how squirmy Bob gets at the Open Space Agile Coach Camp. So wrapping it up, we are at www.meta-cast. That's the .com. I should throw that on there in case you didn't know what the internet was.
As always, we want to thank folks, our broadening audience. We just found that we went over the, I think, five listener. No, I'm just, maybe if we're lucky, the five listener.
We're getting some traction.
We're
here,
getting
buddy.
Some traction. I wanted to actually express thanks for folks who are listening to us. We really respect your time, and we're thankful for being able to give back to the community. It's a joy. I have my partner in crime here. It's a joy to come down here and actually sort of debate, sort of have fun, learn from each other. We hope you're learning with us. So for Bob Galen,
Josh Anderson,
shake
and bake.
We're the Metacast is out.
Woo!